The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast. My name is Ben Pfeiffer, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Max Carlin. Max, how's it going today?
I'm doing all right, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. And today we have, I believe, a first-timer. He's been on a couple shows with other people, but this is his first solo appearance. Our friend Jake Rosen. So Jake, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me. I'm excited to talk some 2021 draft.
The wait is finally over. Football's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of topics to go over, players to cover from, you know, the past week of games and more. So why don't we just get into it?
Sure. Yeah, so let's start at the very top. Let's start with Cade and kind of Jalen Suggs, I guess. But on the more general topic of big initiators and sort of just evaluating that Cade performance against Oral Roberts, which was absurd.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, even, of course, the caveat for competition level. But just watching Cade, I think you see how being a 6'7 primary handler, how you have access to passes that guys who are more traditionally sized don't. And if you're someone like Cade, who is such an adept manipulator, how you can then use these windows that you then open up with your size to just completely wreak havoc on the defense. So like it's as simple as, you know, Cade gathers the ball in a specific way and just looks over the top, and it's an over the top pass in pick and roll that's not necessarily viable if you're 6'3", but for Cade, it's there. And then with his eyes, he can get like a defender to commit on the tag, and then boom, the kick out is there because he has the ability to contort off of that and the strength to get the ball there with crazy velocity still. And one of the things that I really have appreciated about Cade, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but that he's been so good setting guys up perfectly to shoot. So it's either, you know, being passed directly into a guy's shooting pocket or like taking an extra step and it's a perfect bounce directly into the guy's shooting pocket. He's just like, or the timing is absolutely perfect for a guy running off of an off-ball screen, and it's perfectly timed so that he can hop into the shot. It's just like, he's so masterful at everything. And that extends beyond, like he very much does what Suggs did in that Kansas game. That I think we definitely raved about, as we should have, because it was incredible. It was just pure mastery of timing and pace and just manipulating these windows. Cade does that, but then can also win in all these different ways with his size, with his crazy strength, like we saw against Texas Southern, that he just bullied everyone, and can win with a crazy handle. He really is just such an incredibly complete creator prospect. And I think it's really like what makes Cade the clear number one in this class, as opposed to putting Jalen Green Jalen Suggs rather in that conversation, is that where Suggs with the just incredible mental mastery can have a performance like the Kansas game. Cade does all of that and then can win in 5, 6, 7 different other ways on the same exact possession.
Yeah. So I really want to reiterate like the timing thing. I sent out a tweet yesterday after watching the Oakland game and basically hit on the fact that it's like Cade always is passing with a purpose. He's never going to swing it just to swing it or hit the roller because he's supposed to hit the roller. Like when I'm watching him, it's really reminiscent of like a quarterback running a read option. Like he always identifies the defensive end that is going to play either play him or the running back that he can pitch it to. And like quarterbacks who are really good at running the read option, they will literally go until the last possible second and the ball will like just pop out. And then the running back's off down the sideline. Like that's how I feel when I watch Cade pass. It's like he waits until the last possible second so he can draw that defender that much further away from his teammate. And the window is that much bigger for them to shoot. And like I recently just talked about passing windows and just windows in general a lot. And no one creates bigger windows for their teammates than Cade Cunningham. It's absolutely obscene. And like, there's two aspects to that. It's what we talked about, the mental side, just him being an insanely intelligent basketball player. And then there's one pass that I have in particular, like where he really just like leverages his size. And with LaMelo, this was something that I saw last year. I think we all saw like in my piece with LaMelo, I wrote like a few lines about his specific like throwback pass, like over his shoulder. He loved doing it, like getting downhill and then throwing it back over his shoulder to a corner shooter, to the pop shooter. And why that was so effective is because he's simply 6'7", and he can see over his defenders. He can see over the guy trailing his screen. And Cade is like that the same way. Like, I know you guys, did you guys both watch the Oakland game?
Yeah, I did.
I haven't watched the Oakland game.
So I'm sure you've seen this clip that like he rips down the right hand wing and he kind of like runs into three defenders, takes like a pound dribble, and then whips a live drill pass to a shooter on like the opposite left wing area. And basically, it looks like a simple pass for him because it's Cade and he makes extremely difficult things look way too easy. But that was just a scenario where everyone guarding him was 6'4" and he was 6'7". So he had the ability to just see it and rise up and fire it. And I don't know, like he's so far head and shoulders above everyone else in this class to me. And that's no knock on Suggs. I've been wildly impressed by him, by Evan Mobley, but when you get someone like Cade, it's not a question to me.
Yeah, I think it's easy to kind of underappreciate the like just like how accurate he is of a passer. That's probably his least flashy passing tool, but it's one of the most important, and it's truly absurd like how like Max mentioned how consistent he is hitting shooting pockets and how money he is hitting lobs. I mean I think there was a pass in the Oral Roberts game where he like perfectly placed a lob high and away where only his big man could catch it. And there's just routine like that. I mean, you'll see the flashy passes where he like contorts in midair and twists and fires a one-handed pass right in the shooting pocket. Just ridiculous, unbelievable stuff like that. But just the consistency with which he carves up defenses, especially in that Oakland game, which I think was his best overall passing game of the season. Mm-hmm. He just like totally just eviscerated that zone all game. Like it was truly truly would have been like a 20 assist game if his teammates were hitting shots. Like it was an unbelievable performance. But yeah, it's just like the blending together of his passing and his slashing gravity. Because you see how defenses defend him with just all of the help, and he's such a gifted slasher as well. Like we said, like it's such a diverse slashing attack. It's not just the handle or the strength. It's how he blends it all together. How he's adept at lowering his shoulder to generate leverage and further take advantage of his strength. It's how his pull up looks really good to start the year. Like he's been nailing pull-up threes and the shot looks great, and I mean he's shooting like 87% from the line on super high volume and is knocking down pull-up threes. It seems like there's like, I mean, as we've kind of expected, he's gonna be an awesome shooter. Just like a totally complete creator prospect. Yeah, I mean, there's truly never was and never will be a discussion around the top prospect. And that's not even to mention his defense, which is just awesome. Like, he's a genius team defender and is like playing mind games with offenses at this point. It's truly remarkable for someone his age doing what he's doing. Like, it's unbelievable. It all is.
Defensively, I think he looks a little slow sometimes, but I think team defense has been really, really good with him. Like, his stunts are perfect and like very frequent. Rim protection is starting to show up. I really like what I've seen from him defensively. And then, yeah, it's just that combination of he is incredibly physically talented, and having that intellectual mastery. It's just like, he's just so technically proficient. And I watched a couple of Moody games recently too. And of course they played together at Montverde. And they're both just like so technically well-rounded and proficient from like a footwork standpoint, really on both ends. I think it's just very striking for young wings to like have that footwork attacking off the catch and attacking off the dribble and shooting off the move. It's really, really impressive, and definitely a testament to the development that they experienced at Montverde. That Caden at the end of that Oral Roberts game, I sent Ben a compilation of clips. He really just looked like Luka. It was a combination of – it's because it's not just the change of pace. It's the – like the specific rhythm that Luka has with like a back and forth. So it's like a deceleration and then a pullback and then exploding forward. And then you're driving through contact.
He just has so many counters.
Yeah. Like, with a hard, like 1-2 deceleration, and you can finish the runner through contact and the foul, the dead leg three. Like it was so nasty, man. He looked so much like Luka. It was pretty uncanny. Really incredible.
Yeah, it's like last year in regards, like, you know, like someone like Killian Hayes, we talked about like that, like deceleration, craft, strength, counter heavy brand of scoring that, you know, is like Luka and Harden-esque. And I think Cade certainly falls towards like the top end of that group, where he is someone who, like, while is not like overwhelmingly quick, is going to be able to dominate with his ability to string together counters and react to defenses, and then capitalize with his awesome handle and strength and balance and god tier touch. It's all so good. And we've mentioned this before, but like he is strong now, but like he I think he's going to get way stronger. Like, he's going to be huge. Mm-hmm. Like, he can add so much weight despite already being pretty strong and like very adept at weaponizing that strength. Like, it's gonna be so good. Like, he's gonna be an unbelievable like slashing and scoring prospect player. I mean, just he's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll note, like, it's pretty refreshing to see the scoring and just like that overall offensive package come back. Like, I loved watching that Montverde team more than anything else, but like, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. I was like, I walked away from every Montverde game I watched fully satisfied with Cade prospect.
Yeah, because he was a caretaker and he was great at it, but it was wasteful. Like, yeah, they were an unbelievable basketball experience, but it was wasteful of Cade.
100%, no doubt. It wasn't like selfishly were we robbed of like a Cade Cunningham just tearing the entire country apart senior high school season? 100%. But like, that Montverde team, I've said it a million times, like, I think that's the greatest high school basketball team ever put together, and no one was touching them. But anyways, like, seeing the EYBL aggression and scoring and slashing and the floater, like getting downhill, just like, I'm gonna dip my shoulder and you're gonna go flying in like into the basket, like, just seeing that again from Cade is really awesome, refreshing. The biggest question was obviously the shooting. Like, it was easy to project forward and see, okay, he has this, and this. Like, it's likely that he's going to be a competent shooter. But seeing this dude take step backs and go, like, having zero hesitation, you're going to go under my screen? Okay, I'm going to pull this up. And, like, he was having trouble asserting himself into that Oakland game. I haven't watched the Oral Roberts game yet. I've just seen clips. But, like, in the Oakland game, he was having trouble kind of asserting himself into the zone at first. And his first bucket was just, he came down, he got a ball screen, they gave him a little bit of space, pulled up and drained it, no problem. Like, if you told me last year he was going to be doing that a week into his college season and there would still be question marks about who the number one overall pick was going to be, like, I'd tell you you're crazy. Yet here we are. But Cade is just absolutely incredible. Like, I don't want to overanalyze anything. I kind of just want to enjoy it because he's truly that good.
Though I do think that there's definitely an element with him of, like, overanalysis is required because that's the level that he's playing.
Oh, that's the level.
It's like, yeah, that's the level he's playing at. That it's like, it's really it's such an exceptional, special level to be thinking the game at and just playing at that he like deserves that credit, I think. Yeah, it'll be interesting down the road to do an all out Cade Luka debate. Because I think it's interesting. There are a lot of similarities stylistically there. Yeah, he's amazing. He's so fun. I'm so glad that we're getting this. I'm so glad that we've gotten these few games, that it's totally lived up to the billing. Yeah, he's wonderful.
It's really good.
So on the topic of big initiators, Jake, I know you wanted to give a sort of Jalen Johnson spiel. Would you like to go ahead with that?
Yes. I mean, so after last year, like, looking at my preseason board compared to my final board, like, it's inevitable that there are going to be a ton of moving pieces. So when I was doing my preseason board this year, I was like, okay, like, I'm going to shoot for the stars on a couple of these guys. And if they hit, great, and it makes me look good. And if not, we'll readjust with the sample and move on. And Jalen Johnson was one of those guys. I mean, I looked at just a 6'9 guy who in the open floor, just freak end-to-end speed, just quick off the ground, just an absolute wizarded playmaker. Like, some of the passes, granted, the high school competition he was playing when he got back to Nicolet was not great, but when you get a 6'9 guy who's lethal in transition and is capable of throwing live drill passes to the opposite corner and they go right in the shooting pocket with pinpoint accuracy and legit velocity, like, I personally don't want to underestimate that guy. However, the shooting was a clear question mark coming into the season. And Ben and I were talking off the air before you got on, Max, and we were saying how, like, although it's very stiff and I don't think it provides any versatility at all for them, it's better than what it has been before. And he's made a couple, and that's something. But I've just been a little bit disappointed and underwhelmed with him as, like, a half-court creator, getting walled off on switches a lot, just being indecisive with his dribble moves, and just not being very effective as, like, a 6'9 slasher, as effective as I thought he would be. And it just kind of made me look in the mirror and be like, okay, well, what is this guy? Like, with Scotty Barnes, that is, we know that, okay, he's playing point guard this year, but that's not his role. He's going to be a four. He's going to go off the ball. He's going to maybe come off a couple of dribble handoffs, but mainly he's going to be a linking four who wins in short roll situations and can hopefully space the floor and is a great team defender and great plus one passer. Okay, got it. Jalen, I think we were maybe hoping for a little bit more of that, like, maybe Ben Simmons transition point guard role, like that usage. And maybe, and look, the jury's still out, and maybe that's still possible for him. But I know, I feel, and I think talking to both of you guys, have also been a little bit underwhelmed with his actual creation ability.
Yeah, I think as someone once on the higher end, definitely cooling a little bit, it was certainly disheartening to see him get, like, routinely stonewalled by Kofi Coburn against Illinois. It was not good to see Jalen Johnson really, really be unable to, one, to beat him off dribble, and then struggling as he has to really take advantage of getting switched onto smaller guards. I do think it was probably, like, the best I've seen from him in terms of contact initiation, which contact aversion is definitely an issue with him. But still, being unable to convert anything against what should be a very favorable matchup is concerning. We talked about this a little last week with our pal Jackson Frank. I do think I'm still, like, fairly enthused by the off-ball role. Against Bellarmine, we saw him used as a role man a couple times, which I believe was the first time we saw that all season, where he was, you know, where I think a couple plays were where they got him in space and threw a lob to him. And I think that's definitely just another avenue for him to add value. But yeah, I mean, as an initiator, he needs a lot of work. And I mean, there's no primary creation. It's all, I think there's you know, transition, maybe some secondary and mismatch attacking, but it's definitely like a concerning start for his like real half court creation chops, I think.
I feel like a lot of Jalen Johnson is kind of big manny in that, like, you probably want him working on the roll because he can pass in those situations. He is a skilled finisher. And he's like quite large and one would hope could be a physical player. And then, yeah, some handling the open court. And I think defensively, yeah, probably brings the most value when, if you can be getting a lot out of him as a, like weak side rim protector. Although I think his movement has generally looked pretty good. He's just a weird player, though. I think it was our pal Ross Homan who said that his optimal role is like Montverde Scotty Barnes. And I think that's probably accurate, but that's just like, you know, that's a hard context to have. Like that's a team that starts a bunch of huge elite shooters and an elite jumbo creator and like, you know, and another very, very skilled like defensive anchor big man. Not a lot of NBA teams have that, and that was a high school team. So yeah, I just the Jalen Johnson role thing has always been a huge concern to me. I feel like in the half court, if he just played like Isaac Okoro, he would be such a better prospect. Mm-hmm. But he can't because he doesn't have that burst. He can't play through contact like that.
That same mentality wise in terms of just aggression, like,
yeah, and I think that's kind of what he would need to be. Although with him, like, because he is bigger, there is some like big manny, like high post initiation stuff there that we've talked about in the past a little bit, but yeah, he's a weird player. I still don't really know how it works. Once Duke is back, we're gonna need to see much better play from him, and I think, like we said at the time, the overreactions to that Coppin State game when he mm-hmm. really wasn't doing any half-court creation were really over the top. I think that's showing up a lot with these guys who had really big games against very weak competition at the very beginning of the season, especially when they were able to dominate in transition. I think those guys have really fallen back to earth.
Yeah, Max. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I was going to quickly say, I think the Scotty comparison is interesting in a lot of ways, more than just being similar, you know, in their ideal role. Like, Scotty, like, we've seen Scotty Barnes in his optimal role, but that's not something we've seen for Jalen Johnson. Like, he's played this, like, kind of primary perimeter role at Duke, of course, and at Phenom, and with his high school team. So there's not really, like, any, like, obviously, you know, we love to project Jalen Johnson into this role, and it makes intuitive sense that he could fit into that, you know, linking 4-5 role with his passing and off-ball movement and hopefully finishing. But it's not something we've seen yet, which I think is worth considering. And it's definitely going to be an interesting thing to eventually see once he does get to the NBA and how a team decides to use him and if a team is willing to, you know, try him in that role and be creative to optimize him.
Yeah, I was just going to say the last thing I kind of wanted to harp on before, and this was kind of my, like, big skepticism with Jalen Johnson right now, but going back to the point when Max said, like, the lineup that theoretically would optimize Jalen Johnson, we're talking about, all intelligent players surrounding him, which maximizes his passing and everything he brings to the table from that standpoint. Then we're talking about multiple high-level shooters, a high-level playmaker alongside of him, and a versatile center. Like, that's really tough to get in the NBA. And my question would be, is Jalen Johnson's level of impact ever going to be that high enough where you would proactively seek out that team construct alongside of him? Because that's not an infrastructure that many NBA teams just have where Jalen Johnson can go plug and play. And to an extent, when you lose some of the juice as an initiator and a creator that is like, okay, I know you're good for this and I know you're good for these amount of pick and roll reps, and that number is kind of dwindling in my head as he plays more games and we get a bigger sample. So with that being said, I'm just a little concerned that of like the lack of lineup versatility that you can just be like, all right, Jalen, you're going to run with these guys. You're going to run with these guys. And like, I'm just a little bit concerned about, and it's something I'm going to talk about a little later, is just like, I'm concerned with Jalen Johnson's ability to kind of just fit in with multiple lineups and still be a positive version of himself. And that's kind of what we're seeing at Duke right now.
Yeah. I think
I think it's kind of funny that all of that is definitely the case. And imagine if he had been available to Minnesota last year.
Yeah. Would have been beautiful. I mean, I think it's a worthwhile, and that's always a worthwhile question with these prospects like Jalen Johnson, who are obviously incredibly talented and have avenues to success, but require real team building concessions to optimize. Like, to what extent is it worth going through that to optimize a prospect? And then if not, like, how much are you going to value someone who you can only extract, you know, below their ceiling, you know, their ceiling avenue? Like Jalen Johnson, even someone like Jalen Johnson, who like in his idealized role has serious, like, you know, kind of holes and leaps to make. Like, sure, he's probably a big man at heart in his idealized role, but he's only taken like 10 free throws this year. Like, he's not physical, and you know, he, for just an example, he lacks that aspect. So it's definitely like a question worth asking, I think. Like, to what extent is it worth it with Jalen Johnson? Like, you know, for a lot of teams, I think the answer is it probably isn't going to be viable. But I mean, it certainly could be for some teams, and I think there's definitely a world where he is worth it and he's very good. But it'll be fascinating just to see how he kind of continues to play throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, and he's just an interesting guy to track with how teams treat him as a shooter. Because as is, they're giving him space. Like on those Jalen Johnson can't get by Joey Hauser possessions, it's like, yeah, but he's also giving him a significant cushion. And like, yeah, if you did that with Isaac Okoro, he would accelerate and then go straight through you. But that's not who Jalen Johnson is. He did that like one time. Otherwise, he fades away from contact and he loves his little leaners. I'm curious to see what happens when teams really ignore him. I think the concern is that Jalen Johnson is too willing of a shooter for the level of shooter that he is. But we've seen him be a better cutter than I think could have reasonably been expected. Like, he's actually shown, I think, willingness and some good timing and intelligence on with some cutting. So I'm curious to see, like, with different levels of being ignored, how he responds. Because yeah, he's a guy who has to, I think, learn how to play pretty differently from the way that he has in the past to be a successful player.
Yeah, and that goes back to the point about him, you know, not playing the complimentary four-man role. Like, though he has traits that lend him to be able to play that role, he still has to learn how to do it and actually do it before he can add value there. So,
actually, can I go on a tangent about Moses Moody here? Because it's related and we don't have this on the schedule.
Yeah, always can talk about Moses Moody.
I think Moses Moody is like the opposite of this in that he has experience playing like every single role from like near primary handler, or like, you know, 1A, 1B in,
sure,
AAU.
In AAU, yeah.
To like junior year, Montverde was like very much like a secondary guy. And then senior year, Montverde, like very much a glue guy who really didn't have to do much, at least like offensively. And I think that he's benefited a ton from that just because you see how well-rounded of a player he is, that he has such a good feel for spacing and cutting, that like he's very, very, very comfortable with his footwork attacking off the catch, that he is really good passing in those situations already. I think that he's just a guy who so clearly is now perfectly well-suited to this like off-ball wing role that's his optimal role, and I think that he's gotten there by virtue of experiencing all these different ways of playing basketball, which kind of gets back to what we talked about back when we had TJ Ferrick on over the summer. It just experiencing basketball through all these different you know, points of view will really enable you to have the full picture, and I think that very much does help with Moses Moody, who just really, it's just like perfectly in the flow of the game. It's just like everything that he does is perfectly in the flow of the game. And I don't think that that's necessarily the case for a guy who's like a former primary initiator who's just now trying to learn how to play this very specific weird role with Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, just another thing that makes Moody so special to me that I've always loved this, like, it really shows you how smart he is. Like, yeah, the defense gets applauded, and rightfully so. He's an incredible he's a very good on-ball defender and an incredible team defender. But the offense, like, his offensive intelligence is kind of underrated to me. Like, he knows how to pick his spots on every single possession. It's like, okay, you're going to come at me charging. I'm going to attack you off this closeout. And he perfectly, like, he's really good at not only reading his primary defender, but reading the secondary defender. Like, when he takes dribble pull-ups, it's never like, oh, you really could have had something there. Like, he takes dribble pull-ups when people really slide over and cut off his lane to the rim. And he reads and reacts. Like, he's just so quick to see everything on the floor. And I just, like, absolutely love him as a prospect and have really enjoyed him making that jump to the college level and, like, finding his stroke and finding his spots and finding his efficiency. Like, he's just a really smart and good basketball player. And when you're looking up and down the line at, like, teams that are drafting and what they're looking for and the holes they're looking to fill, it's just, like, it's as simple as everyone could use a Moses Moody. And it's really that simple. Like, he's the opposite of Jalen Johnson in the facet, and that's why I think you even brought him up, Max, is that you can fit Moses Moody into every single lineup. There's not a lineup that says, oh, we already have one of those guys, because you can't have enough of those guys. If they're actually capable of putting the ball on the floor and making these skip passes that he's making and attacking closeouts, getting downhill, like, that's just an extremely valuable player, and I love that I can literally picture him playing with anyone on an NBA floor.
And that's the thing. It's like, no matter the lineup, you can have him in this complimentary off-ball wing role, and he's going to add the same amount of value, because you like, there's no, well, I mean, there is, but there isn't really a like diminishing returns to intelligent spacing and intelligent cutting and like, you know, impeccable footwork attacking off the catch. And it's just like he has found a way to really get the most out of his physical abilities through very, very strong technical ability and intelligence. And everything just seems very, very natural and in flow with him. I think he was just, like, so obvious as a guy that size with that length, that intelligence, and that well-rounded of a skill set. I think he was just very, very obvious. And I think he's for sure going to end up, I mean, maybe not in the consensus, because, like, Vassell didn't end up being a consensus top 10 guy, but Moses Moody will remain a top 10 guy for me. And depending on whether, you know, these more variable guys at the top really don't turn it around, he could end up being very high, because it's so valuable to have Moses Moody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what, aside from just, like, being able to do a lot of different things on a basketball court by virtue of playing a lot of different roles, I think he kind of, like, you can see those on-ball creation skills working into his off-ball game that just makes it, like, just makes him, like, the perfect off-ball wing, like, in truly every way. Like we talked about, like, I think he as, like, an on-ball attacker, and UABL is very, like, footwork and rip and strength and pull up based, and you see that translate to, you know, perfect perfect off catch attacking. He has, like, the same, you know, like, stutter rip move that Cade loves, that, you know, is just like a Montverde thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he has, like,
right. They have the same mannerisms. Yeah. Off the catch mannerisms.
It's like he has that.
The rocker step every time,
like the rocker step, like, just like the patience and explosion at which he jabs, and, like, the counters with his spin moves, his extension finishes, and ability to, you know, again, like K, lower his shoulder and absorb contact, and then, you know, being able to see the floor, not only so good at picking out spots off ball, sliding into little creases to find openings, and you know, excellent, you know, when defenses collapse to him when he's attacking off the catch or off of a pin down or whatever, he's able to hit laydowns and simple passes, which, again, are reflective of, I think, those skills of the primary, where, you know, he has those basic passes down off of his own scoring gravity, which was something he, you know, was pretty routinely doing in UIBL, and then now is perfectly translating to off of the ball. So I think yeah, just the blending, yeah, just having as many skills and as much experience in different roles as possible is great. And it's clear that Moses Moody, like, especially, you know, playing on ball has definitely lended him really well to being kind of a perfect off-ball player, because he understands like what on-ball players do and like how to best maximize them and how to play off of them. It's truly, again, like opposite of Jalen Johnson, who has played the same role at every stop, versus Moses Moody, who, you know, even this Arkansas role, while more analogous to like junior year Montverde, is still different. Like it's still not exactly the same.
Yeah, the only concern I've had with Moody really so far is, well, his hips look a little slow. Like, I like his lateral movement, but he seems to turn his hips a little slowly, and the shot process is slow, which is, it's not the end of the world, and he's a very good shooter, and having the size really, really helps, but the shot is a little bit slow, though he definitely compensates for that somewhat with like really, really good setup, really good footwork off the catch and off the move. But yeah, he's just a really good wing prospect. I enjoy him so much. He's so fun to watch.
The wait is finally over. Boatball's in full effect. With many teams strutting their stuff, you might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. Head to BetOnline today and use promo code ARMCHAIR to take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Support for the Prep to Pro NBA Draft Podcast comes from Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. The holidays are here. Have you made your wish list yet? Our sponsor today has the number one wished-for gift of the year. Manscaped, the best in men's below and above-the-belt grooming. Manscaped is here to ensure that you're taking care of your manhood and your nose hairs with their new performance package. The Manscaped Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle and makes for the perfect gift. Imagine opening an attractive box that says, "Your balls will thank you," with the most sought-after gadgets and scents a person could find. Included in this new package is the Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer, which is waterproof and uses a 9,000 RPM motor-powered 360-degree rotary dual-blade system. Look, guys, 79% of partners polled admitted that long nose hair is a major turnoff. Why not use the best tools for the job here? This bundle includes the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, the best trimmer on the market for your balls, butt, and body. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ARMCHAIR. What are you waiting for? Go whack your weeds and make Santa proud.
He's the best.
Yeah, that I think pretty naturally takes us into this discussion that we were intending to have of complementary players. And I think that it's very relevant in this draft that's kind of been billed as really chock full of superstars, when it's I think very much not. I think Cade is, Mobley is his own thing. And I think probably kind of qualifies as that level of prospect as well. And then after that, it's all guys who are not going to be the sun, the moon, and the stars. They can do things on the ball, but they're, you know, they're not James Harden or Luka Doncic. So Jake, what was it that you really wanted to get into with this topic?
So over the past couple of months, and the Houston Rockets kind of falling flat on their face in the bubble really made me look in the mirror. And like, I had somewhat been a proponent of, I didn't think it could help you win a championship, but I had thought that you could get relatively far with this like heliocentric style offense if your creator was special enough. Now I actually like don't think that at all. And had been watching, I watched some Rockets film. I watched some 2019, like film from the 2019 Raptors, who like notably have had, like Pascal Siakam was kind of their third or fourth guy. And knowing how special he is as like a ball handler, we saw in the regular season this past year, just the idea of having multiple creators, and you really need that to win, unless you like have a LeBron James and Anthony Davis and probably the two best players in the world, maybe. That's kind of a cheat code. But I was kind of going through the list, and tell me if I'm missing anyone off the top of my head, just from you guys. Like, I literally just wrote this down a second ago. Of these are like primary players that can be the complete offensive engine on an NBA championship team. I have LeBron, Luka, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Nikola Jokic. And Jokic is like, for me.
I think it's tough to say because there are guys who can be, I think, the like the clear one or 1A with a second guy who's like relatively close, but you know what I mean? And then and then even with those guys, I think there are guys on your list who you're gonna need other stuff, like Kawhi. I don't like 100%. if Kawhi was the only like creation option that you had and was just surrounded by shooters, maybe this iteration of Kawhi, who seems to have made a step forward as a passer, but even then,
I think you still need more playmaking.
But no, and even more to my point, like we're talking about, so on this list you have LeBron, Luka, James Harden, Kevin Durant, who are just exceptional prospects. Like, you look back at their film, you look back at their stat profiles, like, wow, that guy was a clear-cut stud. And then you have Steph Curry, the most transcendent shooter the game's ever seen. Kawhi Leonard, maybe the most unprecedented developmental story we've seen in a long, long time. And Nikola Jokic, the most unseen, whatever. We're not even talking about Jokic as a prospect, but the best big man passer of all time. So basically what I'm getting is that the bar is incredibly high for this so-called quote-unquote primary. And I think, like, I'm guilty of it as well. We a lot of times get caught up in saying, like, okay, this is a potential primary. And I think it happened a lot with this class, like thinking about Jonathan Kuminga as maybe a primary ball handler, when in reality, that's just not the case. And from an NBA perspective, if you really look at the game from a possession-possession basis, there's every player goes on and off the ball. And offenses are extremely intertwined between their actions, between their schemes. You need to play on and off, and everyone is going to play on and off. So this class especially, and this starts at the top from someone like Suggs, who I am very high on solidifying himself as a top three guy to me. And while I don't think he's going to be your maybe primary initiator, do I think he can be a very valuable creator on a championship team? Absolutely. I do. I think he's that good, and I think he's shown us that he can be that good. But and then it also trickles down to, and these are the guys I really want to talk about, because how rare is it, given the list of primaries that we just talked about, that you're going to find that level of player in the late lottery or the teens or the 20s? So instead of kind of writing guys off because they're smaller off guards or something like that, I want to kind of this year especially look at guys as holistic basketball players and say, okay, what skills do you have and how can you apply that to the game on a possession by possession basis? And a couple guys I really want to talk about with that are Jared Butler, who is near and dear to my heart, DJ Stewart, and Josh Christopher. And basically, like, the case for Stewart and Butler are they are like these combo guys in theory. They don't really fit. They're not necessarily on-ball guys, and they're a little small to be your theoretical two. But with someone like Butler, I love that he has some shooting versatility. He's comfortable running off-ball screens. Getting his feet set. He's a very competent catch and shoot three-point shooter. So right off the bat, you have someone that can play off of it. And then while his decision-making, we can all agree, isn't up to par for someone I'd want to be the lead of my offense, has the best handle in the class, in my opinion, so far, until someone else proves otherwise, and is an absolute killer in ball screens. Just murders drop coverages. He toys with bigs. And so if we're talking about a guy like that, if the defense looks like it does this year and he continues that, like, is it feasible that he is just a very like good complementary guard that can just come in and do like his signature things, where like I think his handle is a signature skill? And that's kind of what I'm getting at with Stewart, is like I think DJ Stewart's shooting could be a signature skill. While he's 6'2", 6'3", I think he could be an incredibly versatile shooter, both off the bounce, all running off movement, off the catch. And with DJ Stewart, we're also talking about someone who is a really, really, really good off-ball player and always has been. Like, he's a great cutter, a great relocator. He finds his spots. And when then with Josh Christopher, finally, he's more of like your traditional off-ball guy because he's 6'5". And with him, you run into the issue that like he's not really comfortable, or he's comfortable. He's definitely comfortable. I shouldn't say that. he's not very good at shooting catch and shoot threes yet. However, that's the simple fix,
because then we're talking about someone with an incredible physical profile who has been unstoppable at the rim this year. His combination of counters, craft, skill, and just like really, really impressive vertical explosion. Like when he gets up, he gets up. And I also love how he's wired. Like if when he gets going downhill, there's no stopping him. So those are three guys that I really want to focus on. And I think they tie up this whole like spiel that I've been rambling on for way too long now. But basically to like identify and understand that to get a primary, like they're going to have to be a clean cut stud. And I think a prime example is like Donovan Mitchell. Like Donovan Mitchell, some might say was a diamond in the rough, whatever, fell way too far in the lottery. But when we see it, like when Donovan Mitchell is tasked with too much creation, things go poorly. And you're always going to need that second complementary guard that can run a second side pick and roll. You're always going to need a secondary guard who can go in and create his shot when the defense is already tilted. And this year especially, I really want to focus on finding those guys and finding like certain signature skills where it's like, okay, that is certainly translatable and that's going to provide value at the NBA level.
Yeah, I think that it's important to acknowledge that maximum you're getting one Cade in a class. And yep. You're usually not getting a guy who really does look like he is going to be instrumental in running your offense on almost every single possession. There are not very many of those guys, and like you shouldn't even aspire to be that guy because it's like impossible. But the question then emerges, like, what else are you doing for me? So yes, you can handle some second side pick and rolls. You can handle some pick and rolls, and maybe it won't be as efficient of a play as, you know, it would be for Cade. But what else are you doing for me then when you're not handling the ball? Mm-hmm. And for someone like Zaire Williams, who is not a primary necessarily, if he's running off of that, like that, if he's engaged in that action that Stanford runs in the corner with the off-ball screening, like while something else is happening on the other side of the floor, that's highly valuable because you're occupying defenders. You're potentially getting, you're potentially off the ball, creating an open look for yourself. Could be likely a three, but it could very well be at the rim as well. So you're just creating confusion. You're occupying defenders. You're making everything just more difficult for the defense and possibly creating a shot. My problem is if you're Jared Butler, who I'll give you is a very good movement shooter. He has really good footwork there. He has genuine utility off the ball, but he is small. I know people who've watched more Baylor this year say that he's made strides defensively. I haven't watched that much Baylor this year, but in the past I've not been wild about Jared Butler's defense, and he's small and lacking in versatility. What else is Jared Butler doing for me when he doesn't have the ball in his hands? Especially on the defensive end, but on the offensive end, how is he presenting threats? What is he doing to stress the defense there? And then, yeah, what is he giving me defensively? And I think that's kind of the problem with the non-major on-ball load, we'll say, instead of primary. But just a guy who's not going to shoulder a major on-ball load effectively, what are they doing for me otherwise? Because, like, if that guy is just another 6'4 guard, it can be a little bit of a difficult proposition. Now, if you're talking about someone like Moses Moody, who's 6'6 and a very good on- and off-ball defender, then things get a lot more interesting because, you know, on every possession where the ball is not in Moses Moody's hands, he's adding a ton of value.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, to me, it's like, yeah, if you're not playing with the ball in your hands, what are you doing otherwise to add value? And there are ways to do that for sure. Like, you know, Xavier Tillman is the guy who, you know, pretty much adds all of his value without having the ball in his hands. And I think does that well enough to be a top 20 guy in his class. But, you know, it's harder if you're 6'4".
No, 100%. Ben, before you went, I just want to clarify, like, that wasn't my, you know, go spend a top 20 pick on Jared Butler spiel. It was more of like, okay, this is how basketball actually works. And like, while it would be great if we could simplify, like, this guy's on ball, this guy's off ball, it's not really how it works. And like, these guys become intertwined a lot more than like, it makes our jobs a lot harder. Like, that we can't just separate the two and say, okay, you're here, you're here. And it was kind of just to look at those guys and not necessarily through the lens of like, okay, he's not my point guard, off with you. And like, however, it is worth noting, and I, I wouldn't be surprised if Ben was going to go here, that like, if now you were going to adopt this lens, you have to also realize that you're operating under like the thinnest margin of error possible when we're talking about these off-ball smaller guards. So while I'm preaching you to like look at them with an open mind, it's not just like, throw everything out the window. Like, he'll be able to create his own shot and guard the one, and that's cool. Like, that's probably not going to be enough. So while you do have to go into the open mind, it's also remembering, like Max said, like, look, what are you going to do for me to make it worthwhile?
Yeah, I think with these non-primaries, it's an interesting philosophical debate of creation versus scalability on both ends of the floor, really. But I mean, offensively, I think it's very interesting. It's where I think I'm certainly, like in the past, I've been pretty anti, like non-primary creators, just because I value scalability a ton. And I think I still do for the highest level of winning. But I do think there comes a point where you kind of where having someone like Jared Butler who can really win in second side pick and rolls. And though, you know, he doesn't add like a ton of off-ball value, and he's going to bleed quite a bit of value on defense. I think there's certainly a valid argument to make, and one that you make, Jake, that like there comes a point where that like you need that extra creation to really win, like unless you have one of these like LeBron or like Luka or Cade types, which most teams are just not. But I do think a balance is important, because there's a very fine line between like these valuable secondary creators and like wrong initiator types who really just can't scale and kind of inhibit better teams rather than add to them. And that's like kind of like a crux of my concern with Josh Christopher, is I think like he just screams like wrong initiator to me. And while I do think there's certainly an avenue for him to be a real creator, though, I mean, I'm just like very worried about his like awareness and decision making, and that's a whole different issue that he has to improve. But it's assuming he can, like, it's just Josh Christopher, I think, is very clearly not good enough to be a primary. And if he's not that, does he really add, like, does he add anything off ball? Like, how does he scale next to better players? And I think that's definitely like a debate worth having, is like, is it more valuable to have that, the creation that someone like Christopher will bring, or someone who, you know, can't add that necessary creation, who is going to, you know, be a much better spot up shooter or movement shooter or a cutter or screener or ball mover or even defender. For someone like Christopher, I generally lean negative for winning basketball, because I just don't think he's scalable. I don't see him being scalable enough. For players like Butler and especially Stewart, I'm certainly more sympathetic, because I do think they have real scalable skills while bringing creation. Stewart especially. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly like for most teams that aren't blessed with the luxury of someone like Luka, I think it's a conversation that you have to have when you're building your roster, is to what extent do you sacrifice scalability with your star players for someone else who can really generate, you know, high level offense, and how can you compensate for their, you know, probable defensive weaknesses with a lot of these smaller guard creators. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, there's no clear cut right way to do it on either end, and you're always like, you can't cover everything in basketball. You just can't. You're always, where you gain in one area, you're going to be lacking in another, and it's up to someone else on your team or someone else on the floor to pick you up and cover for you. And that's just the nature of the game. I mean, quickly, my Josh Christopher case would be that, like, through watching him throughout high school and now, I would say his two biggest like detrimental flaws on the offensive end — defense is a different story that we don't even need to get into right now — but on offense, that basically, like, I think he struggles like standstill burst, like deriving from an ISO situation. I think he gets like walled off a bit too much for how often he takes on these ISO situations. And that's also the nature of Arizona State's Dykeman Park offense. But so, and also his decision-making, like his decision-making on a consistent basis, once he gets walled off, it's not great. However, he has a pretty legit handle, especially when you consider his frame. He's someone who's 6'5", like 215, and I think can pack on a lot more muscle based on like how strong his lower body is and how explosive he is. It's just a real athlete. he had a play where he kind of came off a dribble handoff, got downhill, took one hard dribble downhill, and like hit his defender with a nasty cross, changed directions in a second, and hit like a tough fadeaway elbow jumper. And while those elbow jumpers are rather inefficient, he's shooting really well on them throughout the season. And obviously it's a small sample size, but that's certainly something to track. Like, is it possible to me that Josh Christopher is like a much better shot maker than he is shooter? Yeah, I actually think that's probable based on his shot selection and usage all throughout high school and the situations he's been put in and as a, like in his development process. I think that's certainly plausible. So with Josh Christopher, you're getting someone who has handled the ball all throughout high school and AAU, has probably taken on a bigger creation load than he deserves at Arizona State just because of his recruiting ranking. However, I think, and I was telling Max this, I think draft slot and team context is going to be very important for him. If Josh Christopher is like your new guy and he's like the brand new toy in the organization, you're just going to give him the ball out and like say, go ahead, Josh, go rock out. Like those turnouts are not going to be very positive. However, if you put him in more of an off-ball role, you get him going downhill and movement actions, and the catch and shoot three can like come around to a respectable extent, and he can really leverage that rim gravity, which I think has a chance to be like a borderline elite skill for a guard just based on his like craft there, his athletic tools, and just the counters he has at the rim. I mean, I just think we're talking about a potentially very impactful, like different prospect, you know, someone who can offer creation that doesn't come at the expense of physicality or size or explosiveness or rim gravity, which usually does when we're talking about these smaller guards. So nonetheless, like, again, there's really no perfect prospect, especially when you get into these late lotto mid-teens guys and you're always giving up something. But I think Josh Christopher is pretty fascinating to me.
Yeah, I won't speak in too much depth on Christopher because I don't think I've even watched a full Arizona State game yet. But from clips and from seeing him in the past, I think there's something to be said for being a uniquely powerful athlete, and what that can mean in terms of rim pressure. Like, he needs to hit catch threes, but if he can do that, I do think that there is something there with his size and length and frame and just being so powerful and explosive. There are some like aesthetic explosion similarities to Anthony Edwards that are just rarer to see in a prospect, even if he is much less refined.
Oh, and there's certainly some Anthony Edwards shot distance distribution. Looking at his synergy profile last night, for a guy that athletic, the mid-range to around basket ratio is just not where you would want it to be. But again, small sample size, and hopefully he can turn that around.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I liked RJ Hampton. Like, guys who have size and some sort of handling ability and can get running in transition and be effective there, and provided they hit their spot ups, mm-hmm. Can be attacking in these advantage situations and, you know, less entrusted with a heavy on-ball role where they're churning through a lot of reads. Like, you can get value out of these guys.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of your whole point, Jake, is that you can get value out of these guys. You just need to be a little bit more open-minded and a little bit less focused on the fact that Josh Christopher makes some awful decisions and takes terrible shots. Like, there's a player to see there.
No, 100%. And that's kind of came together full circle, and that was the overall point. I think we got there eventually. However long it took me to properly or improperly articulate that was the point I wanted to get across.
Ben, should we do our next topic in this part or in part two? It might take kind of long, but we also have a lot left to discuss.
Sure, we can do one more and then cut it.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about strength. Because I think strength. It's relevant to a bunch of guys. We already talked about it with Cade, how Cade uses strength to create advantages. Whether that's finishing through people or getting guys stuck on his hip and maintaining them there, or just backing down people brutally like he did against Texas Southern in a really genuinely mean-spirited way, just going straight through everyone. So Cade uses strength for advantage creation. BJ Boston tries to use his physicality more to try to create advantages, and he fails because of a lack of strength. I think a lot that when BJ is dropping his shoulder into guys, they're just not moving, and then his you know little extension finishes after that or weird leaners are not actually open like they used to be. And so he still has the physicality, and that's a really cool mentality to see from him, especially from a guy who is slight of frame, and that's always been who he is, and it's something that I've liked about him so much. But he's just failing because of strength. Zaire Williams, I think it's shown up a lot, especially chasing off ball screens, that he gets clipped and just flies.
He goes flying.
Just like 15 feet.
There was the one in like the end of the UNC game.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking about.
So, like, there are like three
hit the floor. And there was one the game he went off in the Alabama game. There was one where he just
there's a bad one in that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just gets clipped on these off-ball screens and goes flying. And obviously has had problems like being bumped offline as a driver. And he has burst issues, but it's just compounded by the fact that like any sort of physicality and he kind of just crumples. And then the one that I've noticed a little bit, and this is a little concerning to me from a projection standpoint, is with Mobley. If you get like physical with Evan Mobley on a tag, I think you can disrupt his role maybe more than you normally would be able to. And I do worry a little bit about how that affects Mobley's role gravity. But it's not too much of a concern, especially because he can be used in so many diverse ways. And like I think even like one like the main example that I'm thinking of, I think he even got a foul call. We always talk about how important strength is and how it's an athletic attribute that is not traditionally discussed when talking about athleticism, and it's such an important part of that, and it's been so relevant for a lot of prospects that I think we've all liked a lot, like Xavier Tillman and Grant Williams. But I just think that those are some good concrete examples of why strength can be so important. Like watch Cade Cunningham play against Texas Southern and tell me that strength is not a crucial athletic ability that has very, very real bearing on basketball.
Or
watch Zaire try to chase off screens.
Or watch Keontae Johnson against Boston College.
Yes. I think it's important to note like how strength blends with other skills and like how strength development could be like more or less beneficial for different prospects. Like for example, like strength development would be like massive for BJ Boston because he has the elite handle to create the initial advantages. I mean, I think what I and you, Max, as well, and a lot of people underrated was just like how, you know, that he really wouldn't be able to do anything with those advantages that he creates because of lack of strength and burst. But if he's able to add strength and, you know, actually move defenders when he lowers his shoulder, then that's hugely additive to his offensive value because he has that, you know, initial advantage creation. But I think for someone with Zaire offensively, just as a comparison, like adding strength is obviously an important component, but isn't as useful because he can't dribble anyway, and he's even slower burst-wise than BJ. So I think, again, just considering strength as not just a single skill, but as a component of the entire offensive or defensive package and how it elevates a prospect is important. Besides, you know, just strength being a key thing to consider. And again, why we prioritize and strong prospects and like why we both love Isaac Okoro so much. Like, just strength is hugely important at the NBA level. And I think it's like, it's definitely like harder to develop than at least functional application of strength is a lot harder to develop and really add than I think a lot of mainstream or people would think that, oh, you know, it's this skinny guy, he's going to add strength and be fine. But even if he can add the requisite strength, which is one thing, being able to functionally apply it and have the necessary other tools to to utilize it is critical as well. So
that it's interesting to consider someone like BJ Boston, who plays so physically and is so lacking in strength, in contrast with Jalen Johnson, who we were talking about earlier, that he's a strong guy. He just doesn't use it very often and like is fairly contact averse. Like it'll be very interesting to track if Jalen Johnson improves his physicality or if BJ Boston improves his strength and maintains the physicality. I'm inclined to think that the mentality is harder to fix because like that's a hard, like it's an aspect of wiring that I think is hard to fix, and really wanting to play through contact is something that's difficult. And I think there are probably underlying physical things that maybe are harder that you really need like a biomechanics background to see, but there are plenty of guys who I'm just very skeptical of people improving physicality.
We see someone like Ben Simmons who like still has been unable to really, you know, like make significant strides in his willingness to embrace contact and play with physicality.
Jason Tatum.
Jason Tatum. It's just like people who really have like it's.
And then the motivation varies. Like with Simmons, I'm sure some of it is. A very mental thing because of free throw shooting.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to shoot free throws, but it's a tough thing to know. And you get into areas that are really, really hard as amateur analysts to get at from a psychology standpoint and a biomechanics.
Yeah. No, I mean, personally, I think I just think there's some things wiring wise in basketball that are extremely, extremely hard to fix. And like a little thing, like I was very, like the Josh Green finishing thing last year killed me. And it wasn't because he would flat out miss with the left hand. It was that he would go to any extent to avoid finishing with his left hand. And like, that is clearly a mental barrier that is just like, and I'm skeptical of that, like changing, like you don't think he's had a million coaches tell him, just go up with your left hand, just go up with your left hand. Like I can tell you he has, and it still doesn't change. So I'm willing to bet on BJ like putting on more muscle. However, the stuff that I've like been very concerned with BJ is just he doesn't look like he's exploding out of any of these dribble moves. Like the ball is still on a string when he's not getting, like when people get up in his stuff, he gets very rattled, and not psychologically rattled, but physically rattled. He's very slender. He's taller, so higher center of gravity. He kind of just gets pushed around a lot. And even when he does get these guys off their like even when he does shake him with a combo move or it actually will like get his stuff off, getting downhill just seems like difficult for him. And I think it's just going to be tough for him in the near future and in the short term to really put forth better production, because I don't see how this is changing this year. And like midseason is, I don't think he's going to become burstier, become stronger or whatever. I mean, the handle is still there, but you also see these instances where he will just get bullied at the point of attack, just like completely bullied. And I think that just goes to show, like, am I still in on BJ Boston as a secondary creator, especially if the shot comes around? And just as we talked about, someone who's going to go off the ball, he's going to attack when the ball comes to him and be a cog and a part of your offense. Yes, I'm very in on that. I think looking back on it, all three of us kind of thought he had like prior lead initiator potential. That was probably a little bit overzealous looking back on it, just thinking about
the tools. it was just wrong.
And we always say like there's no, you learn from everything. And I mean, I had the Caleb Love thing, like the Max can't wait to tell me he told me so, whatever. Like evaluating pre-college people is not very easy. Like everyone kind of looks good. And when everyone looks good, you need to really sit there and say, okay, but are you going to get that off? And with BJ, there should have been more of, I don't know if you're going to get that off. And just with Zaire too, like Zaire had a game winner in one of the games that I watched. And it was, did you guys watch that game where Zaire had the game winner at the end, like a free throw line pull up?
I don't think so.
So basically, at the end of the game, they ISO'd Zaire, and he got the ball, and he started to go with like 10 seconds left. Then there was about like 8 seconds of him getting plucked and shoved off the like line and just going east-west.
I remember that.
Yeah, he's just going east-west, like trying to grab the ball for like 8 seconds. And then like finally, he gathers himself, one dribble to the spot, rise up, cans it, like game over. Like just literally after watching him for a couple games at Stanford, that is the quintessential pre-college Zaire Williams clip. Just not being able to like, and we've always said with Zaire, he's super tall. He has a fluid one, like the fluid release off the bounce. He's a high release point and it's just smooth. So like his ability to create, like he doesn't create the separation that Josh Christopher creates or even like BJ was creating in high school, but it didn't really matter because he'll just shoot right over you. Like Kevin Durant doesn't, that's why like post Achilles Kevin Durant, he doesn't need to create that much separation. You're going to shoot over you. I'm not comparing Zaire to Kevin Durant, but it's the same concept. The issue I have with Zaire is that he literally can't even get to his spots because if he tries to rip off a closeout, he just gets a little bump and then he's gone. And like, that's the part that I really struggle with Zaire. And I'm going to stay patient because he's clearly a late bloomer physically. He's clearly hurt right now. So he already wasn't explosive. So then he's less explosive than he already was, which is certainly going to do you no favors at the power five level. And that's just the thing with him is like, I don't even see him getting to his spots easily anymore, let alone creating the separation that you would like to see for a wing shot creator. But listen, I definitely am in the camp that it is easier to improve physical strength when you have access to your strength and conditioning program in the league than it is to like break these mental barriers that some of these prospects are plagued with.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about Zaire, honestly, because like you said, it's just his play style is not really dependent on being able to move toward the rim or dribble or take contact. Oh. Like I feel like I kind of expected this, maybe not to like the comical extent that he can't dribble.
No, yeah, 100%. I don't want to cut you off, but I am definitely I'm definitely more like content to look myself in the mirror and say, okay, like this is Zaire with a like bummed out knee. That's okay. Like we're going to build on that. And you obviously still see some of the stuff. I am definitely much more concerned with BJ because despite having Zaire really, really high, his usage was always going to be more off ball and just as an incredible tall wing shooter.
Yeah. With BJ, I do think there are ways that it can look better. That's kind of the one thing that I would take issue with. Like, yes, he just looks slow. He looks slow on both ends.
I was going to say the defense too.
His movement just looks really poor. But on the ball, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, last week, that he can still create space for jumpers. And those are going to fall at a better rate than they have. Is he the level of shooter that he needs to be? I'm concerned about that. Very possibly not. But he is not, like, a catastrophically bad shooter. So I think that that is a clear avenue to looking better. And then because he is a guy who does sell his dribble moves with his feet, with his body, that once he also has a threat of a shot that people really have to respect, if that's the case, that hopefully that helps mitigate some of the burst issues as well. So that's kind of, I think, the story of how it turns around for BJ this year, that the shot becomes a very serious threat. So he's scoring off of the shot. And that he has another thing that defenses really have to respect. And because he's so capable of selling these movements already, that compounds really nicely. So I think that's the way that it works out better. But yeah, it's been bad. And I've changed definitely my projection of his role. Though I will say, when they've played against zones, Kentucky, or primarily against zones, you've seen more of what makes BJ such a good off-ball player. I think that his cutting has really shown up. And something I've just always liked about BJ is another developmental thing, that getting to play with Sharif, I think, really allowed him to develop as a very smart and valuable off-ball player in a way that's unique for such a big-time prospect. So I think that seeing that that's still there is good. And I have some, at least I can see an avenue to how it gets a little bit better on the ball. But I thought too highly of BJ and it sucks.
Yeah. All right, should we cut part one here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I was like, I think we have to add Zaire, Kevin Durant to the Prep to Pro Comparison Hall of Fame with Nico and Steph Curry. So, yeah.
I think that there is something valuable stylistically there about the idea that, like, when you're that large, it doesn't really matter if guys can pick your handle all the time because you're a dribble.
You don't need to dribble. It's the idea that your contest doesn't matter. Like, that's basically what it is.
We'll talk more about this stuff on the next part. Again, thank you to Jake for coming on and giving us his time and his insight. You can follow him on Twitter at Jake in the Paint. Jake, is there anything that you'd like to plug that you're working on or anything?
Last week, I just released a philosophical draft piece highlighting processing speed and ways I identify it while watching film and kind of what it means towards long-term projection. I think it's the most important, like, quote-unquote, non-basketball skill. We always talk about, like, athletic tools and whatnot, but since processing speed doesn't really have a quantifiable number, I think people kind of just brush it under the rug, which is lazy and wrong. And you shouldn't do that. So you should go read that and then apply some of the stuff that I laid out to your own philosophy. And yeah, hope you guys read and like that.
Yeah, so go give that a look. You can follow the pod on Twitter at @prep2propod. Follow Max at @MaxAcarlin. You can follow me at @Ben_Pfeiffer_. And with that, we will see you all in the next part.